you know, at some point, your husband, your doula, your midwife, your birth photographer has to kind of leave you because you have to do this work. This is, you know, at the end of the day, with all the supports in place, you know, all the like magnesium lotion, all the candles, all the peanut balls, all the water, like at some point, it's going to be you and the Lord.
Holy Wild Birth is a podcast embracing the reclamation of giving birth, rooted in God's original design, undisturbed.
Here, we share homebirth stories highlighting God's presence as the great midwife, as well as conversations about all aspects of a holistic, spirit-led childbearing year. From the perspectives of myself, traditional midwife Lauren Hall of Rooted in Eden Private Contract Association,
and me, holistic doula and birthkeeper Brooke Collier of Sister Birth.
To choose a holy wild birth journey is to consecrate all your decisions unto the Lord.
And to reclaim creation unadulterated by centuries of human attempts to control and improve upon what God has already called good.
Please remember, birth is not a medical event, but a natural process. We are not your care providers, and this should not be taken as medical advice.
Hi, sisters. Welcome to another episode of Holy Wild Birth. In this episode, I'm really excited to introduce you to Catherine DeGroat. She is an amazing mama of four. And this is one of those times when the episode didn't actually go where I thought it was going to go. It went in a different and wonderful direction. So yes, you're going to hear her birth stories, and they're really great, all of them out of hospital births with wonderful midwives. We're especially going to focus on her fourth and most recent birth, which she calls her wilderness birth. And she has some really beautiful spiritual insights that the Lord gave her from that birth. And then you're going to find that our conversation ends up going down the trail of motherhood and big family life and building a life for our children that we wish we'd had ourselves, and our faith, and all these different beautiful themes that I think listeners of this podcast will actually really deeply appreciate. So I don't think you're going to mind our rabbit trails. In fact, I think you're going to love them. So grab that cup of coffee and get cozy and keep on listening. As we dive into today's birth story, just a reminder that the choices and beliefs of the mamas sharing their stories here are as individual and varied as the storyteller herself, and do not necessarily reflect the beliefs or recommended actions of Lauren and or Brooke. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Brooke.
Okay, you guys, I'm so excited Katie's here. We connected, I guess, about 8-ish years ago over birth photography and through a mutual friend. We live in two different states, but and we quickly, after talking about birth photography, became a little bit of, I like to joke, a mutual admiration society from afar. Yeah. I've just watched Katie's life, just her beautiful expression of motherhood and wifehood and homemaking, and she became a fellow home birthing mama. And we also bonded over our starting our motherhood journeys a little bit late, and then putting that in quotes, late in the game. So there's just so much, but I asked her on the podcast today because her most recent birth story just had some beautiful themes that I think display God's goodness and faithfulness. And, I wanted to have her on to tell especially that story. So Katie, will you just tell everyone a little bit about you, your family, kind of where you live, and a few of your interests? Besides birth, because that we are assuming is a given.
Yes. Thank you so much, Brooke. So my name is Katie. My husband Seth and I live about 30 miles east of St. Paul, Minnesota, and we have four young children. We have a 5-year-old named Priscilla, a 3-year-old named Langston, a 2-year-old named Theodore, and an 8-month-old today named Penelope. So we have a very busy household. We also have a dog. We used to have chickens, but they got eaten by a fox the day I went into with Penelope. So maybe we'll try it. My husband works primarily from home. He used to go into the office every day, and then after the pandemic, work kind of shifted for him. He's a partner at a venture capital fund. And then I have a background in editorial photography, and I shifted over to lifestyle photography, and I did a little bit of birth photography right up until the time I had my first baby. And I had my first baby at 31, and I'm 37 now. So yeah, we both had our babies in our 30s. I would say that I still love photography as a hobby. I don't do it for a career anymore. I'm a full-time homemaker presently. So really into the domestic arts. I always have been. We're really active in our Catholic parish. I grew up Catholic, but then attended different churches in my 20s, and my husband grew up Lutheran. And when we moved to Stillwater, we became acquainted with this beautiful parish down the street from us. So we fully stepped back into parish life around 2021. And then my husband came into the Catholic Church. He ended up converting a year ago, actually, on Easter. It'll be a year. So yeah, we're raising our family in the Catholic tradition, and we love being outdoors. We're very close with our families, friends, and I would say I am day to day just so busy in my household, beautiful busy, with the caring of these four precious souls.
Mm-hmm. You do it so beautifully, and you share about it in such a vulnerable and compelling way, with such humility and grace. So you guys are going to have to follow her on Instagram after you hear this.
Thank you, bro.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So all of your babies are home. Well, your first birth was birth center. Is that correct?
Yes. I've had all of my
midwives every time.
Yep. With midwives, same team for all four, which has been very sweet. So my first was born at Roots Community Birth Center, which is a freestanding birth center in North Minneapolis, which is a historically Black neighborhood. And the owner of Roots is this incredible midwife named Rebecca Polston. And I had great care there throughout my first pregnancy. And Seth and I were not married at the time. Mm-hmm. And we lived about 15 minutes away, had a great first birth. And then my other three, my sons, Langston, Theodore, and then our newest baby, Penelope, were all born at our home here in Stillwater.
Yeah. Oh, so cool. All right. Will you tell us just like a kind of a brief like overview of each of your first three? Because I feel like that kind of shows us, you know, just the progression and like the theme that themes can emerge when we hear that history. So I'd love to hear a little bit about the first three.
Yeah, absolutely. So I feel like we were just in different eras for all of our babies. I look back at those photos and just reflect on that time period. So we were this very kind of like a wild city couple. You know, like Seth drove his motorcycle to work. He's got like a full sleeve tattoos, long hair, and I had a side shave. And, you know, interiorly, my spiritual life wasn't great. But we found one another, and I knew pretty early on in my pregnancy that I wanted to go to Roots because I had heard such wonderful things about it during my doula training, because I had done doula training, and I knew too much at that point to feel comfortable birthing in hospital.
Yeah.
So we were very happy with our care, and, you know, they tell you first time mom, you'll go late. Don't expect your water to break as your start of labor. We had great prenatal classes at Roots. And so I was so utterly surprised when at 37 weeks, I woke up and my water broke. Seth was out walking the dog. And I just said, okay, well, it'll probably be 48 hours. You know, that's what I was sort of budgeting for my time. And that was around 11 p.m. We checked in with our on-call midwife, Jahan, at Roots. She was fantastic and just kind of gave us a little bit of pointers to how to labor comfortably at home. And the big thing about Roots, they kind of drilled into us, was this is a birth center, not a labor center. So we don't want you coming in until you're really in active labor. And so I just labored at home. And it finally got to a point where the sun had come up. And I never felt like my waves were intolerable. It was hard work, but I remember thinking to myself, well, I'm not going to die. Like, I'm not gonna die, but I was irritated. You know, Seth would ask me what I needed, and I was like, I just want you to go away from me. I'm fine. So finally, around 6:30, he felt like we needed to go in. And I remember him kind of scrambling in the kitchen to grab things like the homemade Gatorade I'd made from lime juice and coconut water. And I could feel her moving down, and I just instinctually put my hands between my legs. And I'm sure if he saw that, he was nervous, like, okay, we got to go. So we get downstairs to the parking garage, get in our vehicle. And thankfully we were just early enough to miss rush hour traffic, because sometimes it can take a little while to get from downtown to the north side if there's congestion. But we made it to Roots, and I remember walking in. It smelled so great. And there was a woman laboring in the larger room that had the tub. And I think Seth felt badly because he had spoken to the midwife, and he said, well, the big room is taken, but you can be in the purple room. And I remember thinking, I will have this baby on the middle of 44th Avenue North if I need to. Like, I don't care what color the walls are. I don't care what the room looks like. Just take me somewhere where I can have this baby girl. So we went upstairs, and Jahan had checked in with us because the other midwife and her were assisting this other mother. And I remember telling her that I had acid reflux, that my throat hurt, but that I was okay. I mean, I was past transition at this point. And they were like, well, do you want the tub? We can get a blow up tub for you. And I said, yes. And she came in, she said, well, I just need to check you to make sure you're in active labor. And she looked at me and she's like, oh, never mind. Your baby's head is right there. I don't need to check you. It's too late for everything that you wanted. Sorry, you can't have the tub. Sorry, you can't have the peanut ball. Just push your baby out. So,
wow.
I remember pushing her out, and Seth caught her and put her on my chest. Mm-hmm. And everybody was late. Like, our photographer, you know, came in after the baby was born. My mom came in after the baby was born, and I was surprised. You know, she was 6 hours start to finish. So, beautiful birth. And at that birth, the owner of Roots, Rebecca, she was working with another mother. She came in to talk to me while I was in the bathroom after having Priscilla. And she said, okay, next time you need to have a home birth. Like, you are the kind of mama that does well in that type of, you know, environment. And you came here pushing. Maybe don't, you know, we're not trying to do that next time. No babies in the car. So I always had that bug in the back of my head. But, you know, people are so funny about birth. And I remember writing my birth story after Priscilla was born and putting it out into the world. And people were really, there were a couple of people who were really activated by that. And I didn't recognize how prevalent birth trauma is in our culture and how so many, so many women feel upset about their birth stories. Mm-hmm. And I had just had my first baby at a birth center, right? I mean, I think a lot of people are like, I'll have my first baby at the hospital and then I'll have a home birth.
Yep.
I just skipped the hospital because I just knew, like I said, I knew too much. So that was my first birth. And then, you know, almost two years later, we were living here in Stillwater and our lives had completely shifted. By this point, we'd gotten married. We were, you know, growing up a little bit more and very excited about welcoming this little boy. And living here in Minnesota, we had, you know, George Floyd was killed in May of 2020. So very, very close to our guest date. And so there was a lot of just, I think in those early days, like right before everything kind of went global with that uprising, it just felt very intense because there was so much happening and we were still under lockdown. So that pregnancy really felt like a wild pregnancy, Brooke, because Seth would be taking pressure and stuff. And we were fine. We were just in our own little cocoon here and doing fine, but I had all virtual visits. I tracked my blood sugar instead of doing the smoothie test. I've never done the orange drink. I refuse.
Good call.
Yeah. So it was sort of like, oh, we're just this wild pregnancy and our midwives were great, but you know, they were, you know, really they're frontline workers. Right. So
yeah,
we were just kind of independent. And so with LJ, my birth was very quick. He was my fastest labor, start to finish, 2 hours. I always say I went from watching Unsolved Mysteries on my bed, right where I am now, to pushing him out in a tub. He was also my only water birth. So everybody made it in time, which was great, but he was a fast and furious birth. And he was also my largest baby at 9.5 pounds.
Interesting.
My big boy. I just love him. So
I love the big babies.
Yeah, he's so squishy. So he arrived, and that was my best postpartum. He was the baby that slept 5 hours at 5 weeks. You know, he was the dream baby, nursed like a champ, just slept all the time, fat and happy. He was fat and happy. And so I would go for these walks in the evening with him. And I remember thinking, I feel so good. You know, I would have him on my chest and I would just be walking our neighborhood, and it was beautiful. So, you know, of course, with those easy babies, you get pregnant very quickly after having an easy baby.
Yeah. So I want to make one comment about this 2020 baby thing too, because
Okay.
I had my best postpartum during 2020 also. I think there was something about the world being like the expectations on you to get out and do the things and like do that bounce back. It was like so small, right? Do you think that contributed to like the peaceful, restful vibe of that postpartum?
Well, I think so. Yes. I also think the time of year. So for me, I love summer and sunshine and being outside in the heat. So he came early enough in the summer where I spent the rest of the summer outside with him. It was beautiful. It was just so healing. And our families came and visited. By this point, we were comfortable being around one another again. Yeah. But we were also in our home. We were married by this point, and I think that created a lot of peace for me. Mm-hmm. And we were really establishing our family and kind of away from aspects of, I kind of call it my old city life. We were away from aspects and people environments that were not to our benefit. So we were in a great place, I would say, just as an overall family. And it was my second baby, so I wasn't so wigged out about stuff. I was like, well, it's going to be fine. And like, I can co-sleep with him if I need to, and he's going to be fine. And like, we can take a bath together and it's going to be fine. So it was just a beautiful time. It was probably one of the sweetest seasons of my life.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So then you said his easiness made you want to have another baby.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that we've always been really open to life. So, you know, now as active practicing Catholics, we don't use contraception. But even before that, I think we had our own sort of like internal hangups around it. So I wasn't intending to get pregnant 6 months postpartum, but that's what happened. And I remember sort of realizing that that was my reality. And it took probably a couple months for it to kind of sink in and be like, okay, yep, I'm pregnant again. And I have two small children, because at this point, Priscilla was, you know, she was three. And Langston was, you know, he was just a little 6 month old. So it was definitely an adjustment. But that pregnancy went very well. Another baby boy, and he was due in September. So we had the same team of midwives again, and we intended to have another water birth, but in our tub on our second floor. So we live in a three-story house. Our bedroom is the top floor, the attic. And then we have bedrooms and bathrooms below us, and then it's the first floor. So my midwives wanted me to birth on the second floor in case I needed medical assistance. They didn't want to have paramedics coming up our old rickety 72 stairs. But my midwife, Rebecca, told me that if I had a good third birth and I had I didn't bleed too much, she said that I could have my fourth baby upstairs in my bedroom. So I was like, okay, I'm going to prove to her that I can do this. So sure enough, we had another fast. His was 4 hours. And in the morning, woke up, came downstairs, totally intended to be in the tub, and then ended up just having him standing over the toilet, because I'd get in the tub later with him. And he was a little bit smaller than LJ, but also 9 pounds. So another very healthy, chunky, happy baby boy. So he was a little bit trickier of a postpartum, I think, because he was born later in the year. So we started to lose our light. And, you know, that was a little bit challenging for me. Less time outdoors initially postpartum. But still a beautiful time. And we knew we wanted to have a fourth, but I wanted to space a little bit more. So we decided to space similarly to our first two. So I ended up getting pregnant shortly after Teddy turned one in October of 2022. And I was so excited when we found out we were having a daughter because, you know, then we were having two daughters and two sons, and I love all things decor and everything. So that's my pregnancy with Penny was trickier because I had more nausea and that was uncomfortable, but you know, it was, you know, it went quickly, I would say, I think because I was so preoccupied with my other three.
Right. Yeah. Pretty quick pregnancy.
Yeah.
And then I'm just curious, it's kind of a side note, your midwives, do you go to them for your prenatal visits or do they come to you or some combination? Yeah.
So with Penelope, I'll just, because that was my most recent birth.
Yeah.
I mostly would go to, so my two midwives who served me used to work together and then one broke off and started her own home birth practice.
Okay.
So her name is Allie of North Star Midwifery. And so I would sometimes go to her office because it was closer to me. But I would say about 70% of the time I would go to Roots, where Rebecca owns that, you know, freestanding birth center. But I was mostly seen by some of her staffed midwives who are wonderful. And that was how I did most of my care. So it kind of just depended on what worked out for our schedule. But then 36 weeks visit is a home visit for home birth here. And so they come to you and you kind of talk through where we're going to do everything. You know, you've got all your supplies and, you know, preparing for that home birth.
Perfect. That sounds like they're pretty flexible with options there.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. I think I recall you sharing in maybe a written birth story for a Penny, just that during your pregnancy and maybe even before, you can clarify this, that you were just feeling the Lord kind of speaking to you about some certain themes that just kept coming up. Do you want to share a little about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I knew at some point during my third pregnancy that this was going to be a different birth. And the Lord had kind of spoken that to me, and I was too freaked out to inquire because my fear was, okay, am I going to end up hospital transferring, or is something going to go wrong? Is something wrong with her? So I was in a place of fear, and I didn't really want to push back with asking because I thought if I asked, you know, God's going to tell me and I may not like the answer. So
you get that.
I just kind of sat with that. Yeah. I sat with that sort of this discomfort. But a spiritual theme that has kind of followed me through most of my adult life has been the desert. So, God making a way in the desert. I had a really kind of a Kairos moment with the Lord back in 2016. I was dating somebody at the time who wasn't a believer, and I was so trying to get him to believe. I just like exhausted myself. And I went on a trip to visit a good friend of mine who lives out in Vegas, and we were out in this natural habitat park, and the Lord was speaking to me about, you know, having the courage to kind of lay that relationship down and how he had something else for me. And I really struggled with that. But the visual of desert and God making a way where it seems like there's no way have been, you know, prevalent for me. I mean, I think growing up, I always knew I wanted to be a mother and a wife, and I watched all my friends get married. You know, I hadn't been to a wedding of a peer of mine in like 5 years when I got married. I mean, most of my girlfriends were married at the latest by 25, 26. And so I really was thinking that my season for family had passed me by. And you know, God made a way, right? So making a way in the desert where it seems like there's no way is very prominent for me. And then the veil being torn, I had a dream. I've had two very intense spiritual dreams in my life. I had a dream before meeting my husband where I was in the throne room with God and Jesus. And then before I had Penny, I had a dream. I was probably about 38 weeks pregnant, of the veil being torn and the Ark of the Covenant. And so I kind of came into, I came into the birth like, what is going to go on here? And I'd had a beautiful mother's blessing where a friend of mine had written down this gorgeous Fulton Sheen quote. And I just want to read it because it became the anthem for my birth. And I quote, "Every birth requires a submission and a disciplining. The earth itself must undergo harrowing before it passively accepts the seed. In woman, the submission is not passive. It is sacrificial, consciously creative, and for this selfishness, her whole nature has been formed." And that's by the Most Reverend Fulton J. Sheen. So
that's good.
I think also general themes for our family is attempting to live a holy life as imperfect people in like a culture that has completely discarded family, faith, tradition, and really trying to uphold precious things. So that is a theme for our family. And I knew that Penelope, and I think also, you know, here the culture is you have two kids, maybe three. And then you start having more than that, and people think you're like a crazy fundamentalist. And there is a lot of cultural pushback, not within our own parish, because we have, you know, beautifully large families of all sizes in our parish, but in general, the culture here, I would say, is not comfortable with large families. And so when we shared that we were having our fourth, I knew that it was like we were representative of something for folks, and that needed to be acknowledged. And so I felt this, I think, pressure upon her birth. And I do feel like God has called me to speak life over motherhood and homemaking and family and marriage in a way that is very countercultural to the present narrative that really, you know, we're in a death culture. We're in a divorce culture. We're in a children as a burden culture. So to go against that, because that is who God has called us to be, is really beautiful, but it is not without its challenges, Brooke, I will tell you. And I had faced a lot of like interpersonal challenges related to that previous to Penelope's birth. So I came into the birthing space, I think, maybe a little bit spiritually and emotionally worn down.
Sure. That's very understandable.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot of factors. I remember feeling really nervous to announce our fourth as well. That felt sense in the air of like three is the max, and then after that you're crazy is very real. So
yes. Yeah.
So you're hearing all these like kind of heavy, epic sort of spiritual messages and having these like vivid spiritual dreams, dealing with that cultural climate, and just and using your voice, but then having this ripple effect in your personal life and your relationships that's been difficult, like all this coming together to create this kind of like cocktail that the sum effect of it was that you were feeling a bit worn down.
Yes. But I also knew, you know, God's always been with me through every part of my life and story. So with Penny, I went over, which I had never done. So I was 41-1 and I woke up, I was like, I'm ready to get this baby out. I had done all the things. I had done the dates. I had done the curb. I would curb walk all over our neighborhood and people would be like, are you trying to go into labor? Yes. Why else would somebody be curb walking? It's not something people do for fun. So I was determined, and my midwives were great. They were like, you know, 41 is a variation of, you know, they're like, it's normal. But if you want, you can do this castor oil herb cocktail. And yeah, so I went to go see Allie in the morning. It was probably 9 or 10. She gave me the herbs. I drove home and I told Seth, I have to start this. I got to get this baby out. So started.
Where do you think that sense of urgency was coming from? Do you think it was from external factors, internal?
I was concerned for her. I was like, you know what? I don't want to risk out of home birth by getting to, you know, 42 weeks or something. And I was worried for her safety. Mm. And I just felt like I need her. I need her like in my arms. So
yeah,
I decided to begin this induction. And by 7 p.m., my water had broke. And I was downstairs putting my little boys to bed. They share a room. And my daughter was actually at my mom's side of the family reunion. So they were out of town because they thought I was going to have the baby by now. But I, of course, didn't. So Priscilla and my mom were gone. And we had hired this wonderful birth photographer named Maggie Witter. She's fantastic. So she came. And Seth was filling the tub and like lighting all these candles. And he's like, okay. You know, I called the midwives. They said, don't get in the tub yet, you know, because I've had these very fast labors. And I said, this is different. I am not in active labor. You don't need to fill the tub. I mean, it's not time to get in there. And he's like, well, your water broke. And the last two times you had a baby right away. And I said, I'm just not at that place yet. So everybody came and we just kind of camped out because I knew she wasn't in a hurry. So I was waiting, and probably around, I'm looking at my birth story that I wrote down here just to corroborate my timeline. I put my HypnoBabies on. I've used HypnoBabies for all of my labors, and I love it. And my midwives told me that I should take the rest of the castor oil. So when I started the induction earlier that afternoon, I only took maybe a couple tablespoons. It was a very small amount, but I had, you know, an 8-ounce bottle of it, and you know, it comes in a container. And my midwife told me to just drink the whole thing. So
that's a lot of castor oil.
Yes. So here's what I'll say: very few things in life work as advertised. Castor oil is not one of them. It will do like it'll get you there. But it's not without a cost, right? So it's, you know, it's an induction, whether it's not a quote unquote medical induction,
right?
It's still an induction. And I think probably my body would have ended up in transition anyway within the next hour. But things ramped up as soon as I took the rest of that castor oil and I got really sick. And so that's when things went off the rails for me, because typically with birth, I can get through all of it. You know, I remember being in transition with the boys and my midwife saying, relax your face. Don't make a face.
Yeah.
And that being the worst of it, you know, and I think I had a lot of pride previously because, you know, like I hear people talk about their labor and I would just roll my eyes because, you know, internally I would roll my eyes. I wouldn't roll my eyes to their face, but I was just like, it's not that hard. You know, I've done this 3 times and it's work, you know, no doubt about it. But with Penelope, it was sort of off the rails once the castor oil kicked in and I started to feel a little frantic.
Yeah.
And once I stopped getting sick, I was so exhausted because I had completely depleted all of, you know, what was in me. And I kept telling my midwives, I was laying down on my bed right here, and I kept telling them I wanted to rest. And I will say, one of my midwives, like at one point during transition, I looked over and she was on Facebook, which she probably was on Facebook for 2 seconds. And of course, I happened to notice the moment that she was on it. But I felt like they were kind of rushing me. They didn't want to be there. That was sort of how I just felt like Seth was stepping in a way that he never had before. I felt like he was really active in this labor. And I maybe wanted more support from my midwives at the time. And so after I kind of regained my composure after the castor oil, I just was exhausted. And my midwife said to me, well, I think you'll feel better if you just stand up and have a baby. I'm like, I just want to rest. Just let me sleep for a little bit. So she's like, well, we're going to check you to see where you're at. And if you haven't progressed, then you can sleep. But we think you just need to have your baby. So they checked me and I was, almost 9 or something. So I was like, all right, we're just going to get this over with. So I remember standing up next to my bed and pushing her out. And I remember Rebecca saying to me, if you just open your legs a little bit more. And I just thought, if you tell me to do one more thing, I'm going to scream. Like, I'm leaving my legs where they are. This baby's going to have to just be born this way. I'm not moving my foot. You know, my foot is stuck on a Chucks pad. I'm like, I don't, you're so at that point, I think in labor, for me at least, like I was so far, like all of my patience was gone. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of stuff sensory wise with birth that can be kind of overwhelming. I pushed her out. Beautiful. This was, 12:35 a.m. And I just cried because I was so happy to be done. And I was so happy that she was okay. And I was so glad that, that time was over. Mm-hmm. So they put her on my chest. And I also cried because I knew I had a lot of work I had to do, right? Like, okay, so now I'm going to have to birth my placenta. Then they're going to have to weigh her. Then we're going to have to do, my exam. Then I'm going to have to nurse her. I was like, it's going to be hours until I can sleep. Like, mm-hmm. I was just so tired. My postpartum cramping with this baby was worse than the labor. They tell you with those subsequent births. The cramping I had with nursing was out of this world. So painful. So I just was in this incredible amount of pain after exhausting myself. And I remember thinking, if this had been my first birth, I would have been traumatized. I knew because I'd had 3 previous pretty easygoing births that that isn't always how it goes. And Rebecca did say to me, she's like, this was a harder one for you. And so I called it my wilderness birth, because I felt like I got to a point where I was by myself. It was me and the Lord and the pain, and we had to make a way. Like, nobody could help me,
Yeah.
My husband can only do so much. My midwives can only do so much. Like, ultimately, I'm going to be left with the Creator, and he and I are going to have to navigate this together, which we did. But it wasn't always pretty, but it was still beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like such a different energy to it than your previous 3 births.
Yeah. And time of day too. By 3 a.m. they were getting ready to leave. And I was like, I hate this time of night. This is when Jesus was crucified. And they're looking at me like, you are crazy. But I don't like that time of night. I never have. And I remember thinking, we did go to bed. And we were able to sleep. And then the sun rose. And in the morning, I woke up a couple hours later. It was, 6 or 6:30. And we decided, we were like, okay, well, let's go put her by the window so we can take a picture of her so we can tell everybody that she was born. And we, I'm hobbling over there because I could barely walk, and putting her in the bassinet, and got my camera. And she opened her eyes, and she has these crystal blue eyes. She still has them. Jet black hair. And we both gasped because she was so beautiful. And I took her photo, and I remember thinking, oh, well, this was worth it. Like, look at this beautiful doll that we created. But it was hard to get her here, but she's so gorgeous. And so many people remark to me about how beautiful she is. And I'm like, yes, she is such a pretty baby. And we just adore her. But it was a very sweet moment that next morning after the harrowing wilderness birth in the night.
Yeah. It's almost like you couldn't really take her in until that moment at 6 a.m. Like, you were just yes. tired and done and spent in every way. And it was dark. And yeah. and then yes. the Lord gave you this moment in the morning of like, here she is, behold what I have given you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I felt like this is the most beautiful baby girl in the world. This is the most beautiful baby in the world. And I'm in awe of her. And, you know, it took me a couple of days postpartum to kind of get my bearings back. I was really low on protein. And so I had lots of friends bringing me wonderful. My friend Morgan brought me the most incredible beef barley soup that I still think about. You know, you always think about your postpartum meals because they're so
yes,
good.
It's true.
It was everything. And, you know, my dad brought over like really great steaks and coconut rice and collard greens. And,
oh, yum.
Yeah. Oh, it was so good. So once I had some of those meals in me, I remember thinking, this is amazing. And I had a really great postpartum with her those first couple of weeks up in my room. And we had our babysitter watch the kids. And I had had a fantastic postpartum doula through Better Beginnings here in Minnesota. And she was fabulous. And it was like, okay, I'm going to stay up here. And then at 2 weeks, we're going to get this baby baptized. And we're going to just be a family. And yeah, it's been fantastic ever since. But the birth was really challenging. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was hard.
Yeah. And I think in your written story, you said something like, it can be hard and still be good. It was something along those lines.
Well, and that's something I think in our culture, yeah, that we're so afraid of hard. We're so afraid of sacrifice or penance or difficulty. But there's such beauty in knowing that we can do something hard and that it doesn't mean it's bad. It doesn't mean it's bad. It's part of the process. And I think for those of us who are believing, like, you know, we talk about Eve and what, you know, what happened there. And there's this beautiful verse in Titus that has been sort of a life verse for me after having kids, talking about how she will be saved through childbirth. And I feel like motherhood was always my calling. And so having these drug-free births, these natural births, really solidified that for me in a way that physically, in a way that I want to cherish and remember always. Because making sense of that physical chasm that happens as it transitions you into this new role, right? And I think there's also like this idea of like, with every baby, I've been reborn as a different version of myself, like
100%. Yeah.
So with Penny came, I remember, okay, maybe, yeah, 2 or 3 weeks postpartum, because I didn't want to put her in a car until I got her baptized. So I told Seth, and he's like, okay, that's fine. So, you know, we ended up getting her baptized. And then we wanted to take the kids to a pizza farm a couple weeks after she was born. And I think before having the fourth, like, I felt this need to kind of like micromanage anytime we went somewhere. I was like, okay, do we have our outfits ready? Okay, do we have everybody's water bottles perfectly filled? Like, is everybody ready to go on this activity? And I would exhaust myself with the preparation. Mm-hmm. And with Penny, I remember getting to this pizza farm, and here we come with our huge family, and everybody's staring at us. It's like, who are these people with all these kids? And I was so relaxed. And I remember sitting down and just nursing her while my children played on this farm, and we ate pizza and had beer, and it was so great. And I remember thinking, oh, I know what I needed to do for my life. I needed to have a fourth baby. And now everything is making so much sense. And there's this settledness that I feel. And like, I had a bit of a restlessness before that, and maybe some anxiety too. And so I always say, like, hey, if you want to get rid of your anxiety, have a fourth baby, because you simply cannot hold all of that. And you sort of, and it created more space too, I think, for me to be like into my creative endeavors and like large family culture too, Brooke. Like, So my mom is one of nine and my father-in-law is one of eight. Seth has one brother. I'm an only child. So we are reclaiming large family culture in our generation. And I'm like, I love connecting with other millennials who have more than three kids. Like, I'm so passionate about it. Listen, have as many babies as you want. Like, don't have kids, have the two kids, whatever. Like, no judgment from me there. But there is something really beautiful and special, I think, about the culture that's created and the ecosystem of a larger family. I could go on and on about it, but there is like this tremendous joy and this energy. And my husband and I are both very amused by it. Like, oh, here they're doing this thing. And like Penny is involved, even though she's just 8 months old now. Like, she's in this cohort of small degrowth children in our house. And it's just fun. Like, there's such beauty to that. And I really enjoy creating that culture in our home. It's so fun.
Yes, that's so beautiful and so true. I just resonate with that. That's really cool.
But I've had to let go of so many things, you know, and you've talked about this so beautifully too, Brooke. It's like, I want the perfectly clean house. I do. Like, I love that. I love the, like, open up every drawer and everything is Marie Kondo folded and there's no dog hair on the floor. And I think the Lord has really, like, beautifully broken me of that and asked me to enter into this radical acceptance. And I have other mothers at my church, especially, who have big, beautiful families who are like, the clean house is like not the thing, you know? Mm-hmm. And one of the mothers at church told me she just had her fifth son. She's like, I am a beggar at Christ's feet day to day. And I feel like with Penny, you know, because sleep is so hard, you know, especially being 37, I can't just be up all night. It's so hard. And back when she wasn't sleeping well, she sleeps great now, but back when she wasn't sleeping well, I would just wake up and be like, God is going to give me the manna for today.
Yes. Like,
I had to have a radical dependence upon him because I knew that I needed to get up and take care of my family and that I had to do it with joy. And it was going to be hard because I was tired, but he just supplies everything so generously. I mean, there were days where I'm like, I'm not sure how I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And he would just give to me so beautifully.
Mm-hmm. I heard, I don't remember who shared this with me at some point, but we can get in our head what we think we need. And so we ask for, like, I need sleep, you know? And like, hey, the Lord promises to meet our every need. So if he's not giving you sleep in the way that you think you need it, that must mean you don't need it as much as you think you do. And what you do need, he's going to give to you, even if that's just the grace to endure in spite of not having as much sleep as you think you need.
A friend of mine who is like a mother mentor, Vanessa, she shared with me because we were FaceTiming one day about I needed some parenting advice from another mom and she was so helpful. And she's like, don't make sleep an idol. Like, don't be so obsessed with sleep and the control of sleep that you miss the, you know, the reality of like today, right? Because like it comes, like sleep is going to come, you know, postpartum is a journey. I mean, I'm 8 months postpartum and I feel like, oh, I'm back to normal. And then I'm like, well, I'm still postpartum, right? Like I'm still in process. And so I really feel like with Penny, I had to learn to really lay it down at the feet of Jesus and accept like, okay, like things are going to feel chaotic and maybe overwhelming and overstimulating for me. Like, what are ways that I can create peace for myself? And she has often been like being able to take her away and like nurse her in a dark room or be with her in her nursery or have her upstairs here with us at times has just been so sweet to have that quiet with her. And I really do cherish those moments because the rest of the time, I mean, we're just like such a busy household and it's always like slight chaos here. But it's beautiful too.
Yeah, I think breastfeeding gives us this It's like God's way of giving us built-in breaks, if we can choose to see it that way, instead of seeing it as like, oh, I have to be pinned here feeding my baby. Like, no, what if you saw that as God's built-in retreat for you in the middle of your busy day?
Yes. It, you know, and our nursing journey has been so beautiful. You know, we had a few hiccups at the very beginning, but we've, you know, she loves nursing. She also loves to eat food. Her favorite food right now is pulled chicken. So she's like,
I brought her up in
vintage high chair, and she eats pulled chicken and loves it. But that has been such a sweet journey. And I do cherish those times, because as a mom of four, I just know in a blink of an eye, she's going to be like her big sister and, you know, off running the races at five and getting ready for, you know, kindergarten at age six. So yeah, it's just been so sweet. She is really, truly like the cherry on top in our family. I love having family pictures taken, and every time we've had them done, I'm like, oh, like I feel so blessed by God. I mean, I feel like if I could go back 6 years ago or 7 years ago to my 30-year-old self living in this sad apartment in St. Paul, and if she could just see what was ahead of her, like there's so much beauty and goodness there, and God is so faithful in that to us. And it's just it's beautiful to look back on, you know, these past 8 months of her life so far.
Mm-hmm. And you said she's 8 months today as we're recording this. So it feels like a special time to sit down and reflect and her impact on your life. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I just, this morning I was holding her after she woke up thinking like, I just want you to stay 8 months for like 2 years. Is there a way for you to be this little baby? And, you know, we don't know if there's more babies for our family. Certainly we're open to life, but, you know, I feel like my health, you know, my body could use a little restoration after four pregnancies in 5 years. So I'm on a little bit of a pregnancy sabbatical, as I call it. But I really just cherish her, because she could very well be our last baby. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's probably a good policy to cherish everyone as if they are, just because you don't know, you know?
You don't know. And I feel so grateful for the opportunity to have had all these babies. And I'm so glad that, you know, this kind of out of hospital birthing put our family on kind of a different health trajectory, I believe, mm-hmm. because once I started, you know, I was always like, I grew up, my dad loves to cook. So he would always buy the best ingredients that we could afford as a family. So he was a member of a co-op. So I was familiar with, you know, organic food and the natural, you know, living movement. And then I started getting into things like, you know, direct farm, purchasing, you know, your meat from a farmer. And then I started getting raw milk from a local farm. And, you know, I started taking supplements and, you know, learning about things like grounding. I mean, there were just so many little, changes that as a result of having these more natural pregnancies. And now I'm just such a proponent for that lifestyle, because I have seen how it has benefited our family tremendously.
Yeah, I think you're so right. There does seem to be a connection, almost like once you dare to take a step outside of the conventional way of doing things in one area, it tends to have this like, oh, what other things might I need to question and consider doing differently now too?
Yes. And you know, choosing to kind of do a different path, like I said, it's not been without its cost, but the benefit and the blessing has come back twofold for us. I feel like, you know, we were at the Christmas tree farm cutting down our Christmas tree, and this mom came up to me and she's like, "Do you have four children?" And I was like, "Yes." And she's like, "I'm trying to decide if I should have a third." And I was like, "You know, like only, you know that." And something to discern between, you know, you and the Lord and your husband, but also like, it's so beautiful. And You know, I feel like having Penny has given me so much opportunity to really talk about some of these things with, I think, the confidence, you know, that I didn't have before.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. I love that the stranger is like bearing her soul to you about her reproductive future at the Christmas tree farm.
So many people are like, I'm like, it's, well, and I do think we've really silenced those conversations culturally because people are so afraid to dream about that because the messaging, and I do think this depends on like what part of the country you're in, what country you're in, you know, but here, like in the upper Midwest, it's, you know, it is unusual to have more than, you know, 2 to 3 children. And I actually read recently that the average birth rate among women has gone down even like 40 or 50%. Like it used to be before. In 2017, it was something like 2.1 kids per woman. And now it's like 1.67.
Crazy.
Yeah. And it's really, it's so sad to me. I feel like we're missing out on, we're missing out. And I just can't imagine a life without, especially I look at my third, because like I said, my boys are so close. He easily could not be here. I'm like, this, I can't imagine a world without Teddy in it. You know, I'm like, I'm so glad he's part of our family. And it's so funny to see him and Langston together because they're a year apart. It's such a joy. And I think, how could I not have that beautiful person in my family?
Yeah. Yeah. You never hear anyone regretting having another child.
Exactly.
I mean, very rarely. I'm sure there's somebody out there, but it's not a common story.
Freedom. Yeah. Like freedom and making that decision. And it's like, girl, if you want another baby, have another baby. It's so, that's why I look up so much to you, Brooke, because I love seeing these moms who are like, we're going to do this. And it's not always going to be easy, right? Like, I think, like, for instance, I've had to give up some things. Like, I really wanted to do homeschooling. And I didn't feel peace about homeschooling my oldest for kindergarten. And she's going to kindergarten next year. She's going to a school, which I really, I feel at peace about. But it was like, okay, in order for me to show up as the mother that I need to for all of my children, I can't have this on my plate too. It was like the thing I had to surrender, and it's so hard. And recently I packed up a bunch of my homeschooling supplies to give to a girlfriend of mine who's going to homeschool next year because our daughters are the same age. And I just kind of like put it away. Mm-hmm. And I felt this like, you know, oh, and I'm like, oh, well, if I only had 2 kids, I would for sure be doing it. It's like, this is my reality, and there's sacrifices here for this season, and maybe I'll, you know, I think I'll homeschool at some point, but for right now, no. So, you know, packing those things away and releasing them to the Lord and to my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was gonna say to you, I think it is a seasonal thing, like, right, this is what, when we're walking with the Lord, we have to keep having an ongoing conversation. So it's like, right now you're being led to do this. But you revisit it, you keep revisiting it, because it's a living conversation with a living God, and he might lead you in a different way in a different season. And our job is just to be like, have our ears open and our spirits willing to shift things as he leads. Yes. And that's what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it's really good. When we had 4 ages 5 and under, my 2 eldest went to school too for a little while. So, okay, that's, and then so we took them back home later.
Yeah. And I think we, you know, we're really committed to raising our family in the Catholic tradition. And so having access to an incredible Catholic school and an incredible parish and fabulous religious ed, they do catechesis of the Good Shepherd at our parish, which is a Montessori-based catechesis program.
It's phenomenal. Cool.
Yeah. I feel like that's exactly where our family needs to be, because I don't have the religious education to replicate that at home in a way that I feel like, and I just love this idea of community parish life. I mean, oftentimes I'll see, you know, going to school, like kids from the neighborhood walking or biking to school, and everyone's convening together at this church. And it's so beautiful. And it feels like it's like, oh, I'm giving my children this childhood that I always wanted. Because I had a very different childhood and upbringing from the one that we're creating for our children by mm-hmm. design. And it feels like every decision is like, okay, I'm creating something that I would have loved for myself, but I'm able to, and I didn't have it, but I'm able to do it for my own children. That feels really special.
That is really special. And it sounds like a really unique and cool situation that you have there with your parish and those opportunities that it offers and the way that your neighborhood kind of like centralizes around that. That's probably unique. It is.
And I think that's how it was back in Europe, you know, like hundreds of years ago, where like the church was the center. It's very interesting because, you know, it's, there's all sorts of things happening at the church. There's religious ed, there's school, there's mass, there's daily mass, there's, you know, fish fries on Fridays during Lent. So there's always something happening there. And, you know, I think it's always been, a wonderful parish, but I've also noticed in the past couple of years, so many people moving here for the parish too. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes there'll be like new families who are like, we want to raise our families this way. We're leaving an old neighborhood, old community, coming here because this is such a reverent, I don't know if you're following much within the Catholic Church, but there's a movement, a traditionalist movement right now. That I think started kind of during the pandemic, where a lot of people started attending the Latin Mass. And so within the Catholic Church, there's two reverent Masses. The Latin Mass, which is the Latin Rite, very similar to what was practiced everywhere pre-Vatican II. And then there's Novus Ordo, which is Mass in the language of the people. So, okay. In Spain, it would be in Portuguese. In the United States, sure. It's in English or Spanish or maybe French, depending on where you're at. So the church here is a very reverent parish, Novus Ordo. So I love my Latin Mass girly friends. We're very happy here at our parish. And I grew up Catholic, but the church that my parents presently go to is not reverent. Wanting something like that for my family, being able to access that has been so great. And it's been lockstep with my motherhood journey. And so much has made sense to me as I dive into more Catholic theology, especially around, you know, motherhood, family, domestic life, vocation, human sexuality. I mean, it all just kind of, it's gone alongside with my pregnancy and birth with Penny, and really been with our family. And so that's a big part of this story too. And I'm not like got down on this rabbit trail. Sorry, bro.
You know, I'm loving, no, we prayed before we recorded that the Lord would lead this conversation where it needed to go. Yeah, and it turns out we're having a conversation about motherhood and raising large families and like raising children, all these things. I love it. I'm actually really loving it. And I'm think like, that this go. Is a very valuable conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
I really appreciate your just honest, open sharing about all of these things. And I'm sure there's at least one person out there who needs to hear all of what you're saying right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. I'm we're here in this part of the, I mean, but really and truly, her birth, this wilderness birth, taught me, like, I can be alone. You know, I think about death, right? Like, someday I'm going to die and I'm going to be alone with my creator once again. And I feel like I got a little taste of that with this birth, where, you know, at some point your husband, your doula, your midwife, your birth photographer has to kind of leave you because you have to do this work. This is, you know, at the end of the day, with all the supports in place, you know, all the like magnesium lotion, all the candles, all the peanut balls, all the water, like at some point it's going to be you and the Lord. And I wonder if it's like learning that radical trust. Like, can I trust him in this moment where I have come to the end of myself physically, emotionally, and I'm spent and I'm really just here with him. And what does this mean? And can I trust him and can he carry me through this? And he did so beautifully.
That's so well said. That's such a perfect, like, closing thought too. I usually ask people, like, what do you want moms to know as they're approaching a home birth? And I feel like that is a good message.
Thank you.
Remembering that at the end of the day, it's between you and God, you're together in it, and he's sufficient, and all the other things are props, like things you can't put your trust in those. You can only put your trust in him. And I'm also seeing like this tie between what you just said, like that's a message, like that's a learned experience God gave you through Penny's birth that you are carrying with you into how you mother your children in all those other ways that we were just talking about, right? You're leaning into him alone as you make all these unconventional choices and design a life for your children that you believe is best. And I just love God's faithfulness to use birth to inform our motherhood and our womanhood. And I think that's part of what that passage means about being saved through childbearing. Working out our salvation through. Yeah, I'm not saying it very well right now, but.
No, I'm tracking. It's completely grounding. And I long for every woman to have some sort of spiritual experience that mimics that, right? Like this reckoning of our humanity, our womanhood too, right? Like really understanding that, like, you know, my husband and I are not the same, right? And you see that in birth. Like, it's so very clear we're different. And so having that experience, whether it be through birth or, like I said, there's other ways in which I think people can come face to face with God. It's truly a gift. It's such a gift and an honor. And I think people are longing for that. Like, I think we're a transition and like a ritual thirsty society where we're longing for. We're longing for those experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And this is one place that we have as women a very unique opportunity to get that.
And you know, the other thing I just thought I would mention, this would be like my last thought too, is like, it's, you know, we're in a time of unprecedented technology, right? And I mean, you and I in our lifetime, Brooke, we have experienced massive technological changes, cataclysmic. I mean, just, I don't think, and then also walking through a global pandemic and the kind of political environment that our society has created. I mean, we all need grace, but what I love about birth is like, it just still strips us down to our humanity, right? Like, hey, at the end of the day, like all the AI in the world, all the Wi-Fi in the world, all of the technology, we are still vulnerable to our creator, to the process of birth. It is still unpredictable, right? Mm-hmm. In a way that we don't, what else is unpredictable? Like what, nothing else. It's this last, I think, remaining and yet so central to all of our lives. Cause every person was born of a woman, right? So we look around. Mm-hmm. See all these people in our community and think, okay, every woman at one point gave birth to that person. And what does that mean? And I love how I love how birth grounds us to our humanity. It's very, it's very humbling in a beautiful way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. And doing it at home is like choosing to fully embrace that process of being stripped down to our humanity. I think like, we can try to escape it through technological advances in hospital settings and try to think that we can control it and predict it. And it's an illusion.
And then I think too, fear, you know, so many people are like, I'm just afraid. I'm like, if you could get past the fear and let yourself be with the Lord, you would come out of, I mean, I feel like every birth I've come out of being like, oh, I'm really capable of this. You know, this is something that my body can do and that I can do.
100%. Gosh, I'm going to stop us because I know we would keep going, but this has been such a good conversation and I'm very excited to share it. So thank you again so much for coming and so generously sharing both your birth stories and your wise reflections on motherhood and life.
Oh, it was my pleasure, Brooke. I really appreciate it. I was so happy when you, I remember right away after I had Penny, you're like, let's do a podcast. I'm like, okay.
I was like, I don't want to seem overeager, but when you're ready, could we?
Yes, this is a good time.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All right.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Holy Wild Birth. We hope that you were genuinely encouraged, inspired, and challenged by what you heard today. If you're loving what you hear, please make sure that you share it. Leave reviews. That helps other mamas find this content as well. And don't forget to read the show notes, okay? Because that's where you can find our email address if you want to reach out to us and start a conversation. It's also where you'll find free offerings as well as invitations to work with me and or Lauren. We can't wait to get to know you. See you next week.